This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Season 5, Episode 14 of Commentary Trek Stars, a show which deals with the work of Star Trek creators outside of Star Trek. I'm Mike.
John's here.
Max is back.
I know, I'm back.
How's it going?
Welcome back, Max.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
And now you're all married and stuff.
I am indeed married now.
That's fun.
It's so much fun.
And it is, isn't it?
Yeah. It is. Honestly, when we got the license, it was $98.50, which we paid for with a $100 bill, which gave us $1.50 in change. And that is precisely the amount of change that I have experienced since getting married.
Yep. I guess that's kind of how it works when you're living with the person for like 5 years prior and all that stuff, right?
Yeah, I think it's 4 years.
Oh, whatever. Close enough. Well, congratulations nonetheless. It was a hell of a party.
Thank you. Yes. It was. It went off without a hitch. Everything went really well until the honeymoon when we both got really bad colds.
Oh. Well, that's fun. Yeah.
It was okay, though. I mean, it was the Ritz-Carlton.
Yeah.
With a really bad cold, about the best place you can be with a coal.
That's good. Yeah. I went to that ice cream place that you were talking about, by the way, at the beach club.
Oh my God, that place is amazing.
It's pretty good.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's like right there. I loved that place.
Anyway, enough of wedding talk and all that.
Let's talk about ice cream.
All right.
Sorry. William Shatner.
Let's talk about William Shatner, the only thing better than marriage, William Shatner, right?
Yeah. He's certainly proven it several times.
Yes, he apparently likes it a lot.
All right, William Shatner, you know, back when we came up with this idea for this show, you know, and we had like, just like any show, just like with Star Trek, we had a number of ideas in place. And when we were pitching it to like Chris here at Trek FM and stuff, we were like, these are the types of shows that we could do. We could do something like this where we talk about Ron Moore, or something like this where we talk about J.J. Abrams. Or we could think outside of the box. For example, we could do a series on William Shatner, where we look at what I like to call the Shatnerverse, the series of movies in which he plays himself. And we can look at sort of like that, his arc as a character in like fictional movies.
And I said, or a good idea.
This is the best idea. This
goes in the pantheon. This is the Hall of Fame of ideas right now.
This is the William Shatner of ideas, right? That's what I think, anyway.
I think this might be the Is There No Truth in Beauty?
You know, that's a good episode. That's a solid... It's not a good episode, but it's a really interesting concept for an episode.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Yeah. Stay tuned.
Still trying to work the math out on that one. That's like Bilbo's compliment at his birthday dinner.
Yeah. I don't know what that means, but yes, I agree.
I'm sending you a copy of Lord of the Rings, okay?
I don't want to read that thing.
You're going
to
read it.
Those movies took like 5 years to watch, and I'm not going to... No, it's
Hold
not
on.
Happening.
Even if you're like literal about it, it only took 3 years to watch them.
And they would have been better with William Shatner.
Yeah, how come? If they would have had Shatner as Mordor, then I would have been like, yeah.
Mordor's a place!
Whatever. He could have pulled it off. Tell me he couldn't pull it off. If anyone could, it would be William Shatner. Anyway, we're finally doing this. It took us 118 episodes, but we're finally getting around to William Shatner looking at the movies in which he plays himself, of which there are... Five. Who knew? You know? But there are. All right. So what we're going to do this week in preparation for this series, just like we do for every series, is we're going to take a look at William Shatner's work in Star Trek. Seems pretty obvious, but, you know, hopefully we'll find some hidden gems in there somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So, before we do that, William Shatner, as on the whole, as an entity, as a being, as everything he is and more.
As a trickster god or an Olympian.
Right, any of those things.
He was
Max.
In Battle of the Stars, Battle of the Network Stars.
Or Denny Crane.
Denny Crane.
Oh, Denny Crane.
Hmm. Max, what are your thoughts on William Shatner?
Like a lot of Star Trek fans, I think there was a point where I loved him, and then I learned that he had some sort of problem with being Captain Kirk, and then I kind of hated him. And then over the years, I kind of came to terms with the idea that maybe he didn't quite understand his own importance, and maybe, considering his ego, that's for the best. Because if he really knew how amazing his thing on Star Trek was, then he might be even more intolerable.
I suppose that's possible.
So for a long time, I had a hard time dealing with him as a guy. And then like a few things happened where I heard him sort of mentioned, like, I'm actually kind of proud of my work on Star Trek. And he realized that he was kind of a silly person, and he became funny, and he revealed that his acting abilities were never lost. They were always there. He just didn't really know what to do with them for a while, partly because other people didn't know what to do with him.
Yeah.
And then captains, and Boston Legal and his talk show. And I'm doing this way out of order for some reason.
That's okay.
But there was a series of events that basically led to me going, like, I love him. I love him. He's awesome to me. I want to see him in more things. And I have a hard time thinking of him as anything other than an always ever present, solid gold potential object for any movie or TV show or stand-up comedy special, but really not albums.
Oh, his albums are amazing, and one day I hope that we can cover that. And I know that Chris does too, because he wants to be on that series. But yeah. We will get to that at some point in the future. What about you, John? What are your thoughts on William Shatner?
I never passed through any phase where I didn't love him. Now, I don't know him personally, so it's not, you know, I don't love him in that fraternal sense or anything like that, but I've always loved the fact that of all of the Star Trek actors, he really seemed, I guess the touchstone is that SNL skit back when Star Trek IV came out, and the infamous Get a Life skit that turned the fan base against him, where he got up there and he completely just mocked everything. And then there was another skit where the Enterprise was a revolving restaurant and they made fun of the whole con thing.
The Love Boat.
And no, Love Boat was Picard.
Yeah, Love Boat was Picard.
I don't know what skit you're talking about.
Oh, gosh, it's a great skit. I'm sure it's on Hulu or YouTube or something. But
it's gonna hurt.
I've never once disliked his embrace of the absurdity of it all. He really has always, to me, come across as a guy that never took it seriously, and I suppose that could be a knock from one perspective, but from my perspective, it's for him, it's all just fun and games. I've never gotten the sense that like he took it too seriously, probably because he didn't take it seriously enough, but I've always enjoyed his sort of bigger than life zest for everything.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it took me a while to come around to the brilliance of Shatner, which I know is going to sound weird for people who are familiar with with me from this show and others, since I'm, you know, like the biggest William Shatner fan in the world these days. But you know, even though like the movies were my introduction to Star Trek, I really sort of grew up with The Next Generation. That was the show which was on every night, and that was really my first true Star Trek love. And the original series was just kind of this thing, and I never disliked it or anything like that, but I always related to, you know, Captain Picard more because he's the one that I was more familiar with and everything like that. And it wasn't until, you know, a couple of years later when I started hanging out at our local comic book store where our friend Josh worked, and Josh started talking about how awesome William Shatner was. And, you know, I'd be like, well, I mean, yeah, he's Captain Kirk and everything, but, you know, and he'd be like, no, man, he's the best. Look at this. Look at what he did here. And then look at this thing, you know, where he's, you know, talking to, telling a story about meeting Coco the gorilla.
That's a great story.
Or look at his rendition of Rocket Man, or check out this movie that he's in, you know, which is in Esperanto or whatever, you know. And I started, like, finding all of these little hidden gems basically through Josh. And I'm like, you know, he is really kind of awesome because he sort of takes this Captain Kirk persona into everything that he does. And he is larger than life. And it does seem like he has this sort of joy of life about him. And he's willing to be goofy and willing to be over the top. And that thing that everyone makes fun of him for is really like a thing which he's doing intentionally, and he's completely aware of his decisions, and he embraces them. And there's something like really, really wonderful about that. And it was right around the time that, you know, the first movie in this series came out, Free Enterprise, where Josh started talking about how amazing this idea was and everything, you know, like a year before this thing even came out, and then started talking about what it was that he did in the movie before I had seen it. And when I saw Free Enterprise, I think that's when it completely solidified for me, where I was like, oh my God, William Shatner is like the best thing to ever come out of Canada. And I say that as someone who loves Canada, you know. I mean, it's just like this amazing force of nature that is William Shatner, and I love everything about it.
Agreed.
So William Shatner, obviously best known as Captain Kirk on Star Trek, and he kind of made that role. Now, John, what are your thoughts on his portrayal of Captain Kirk?
Can't imagine it working with anybody else. I know we have the reboots and Chris Pine is doing a fine job as a character named Captain Kirk, but it almost belabors the point to just sort of be like, I remember understanding his portrayal of Kirk for the first time, like really truly understanding it, when they released that double disc of the soundtrack for the motion picture. And they had the second disc that was Roddenberry giving behind-the-scenes info, and he interviewed DeForest Kelly, and he interviewed Mark Lenard in character as Sarek, and he interviewed William Shatner.
Yeah.
And everybody he interviewed was either in character or taking things really seriously, and it was, you could hear Shatner smiling through the entire thing, and it recolored how I saw his approach to the character. He wasn't approaching it as this great big method acting workshop role. He was taking it as, this is a bigger than life sort of hero figure, and that's why it works. That's why he's such a convincing anchor, regardless of which version of Kirk you're watching, whether it's original series or the movies, or even when he has the, you know, I mean, it's basically a guest starring role in Generations. His portrayal of Kirk is so definitive. It's so just spot on for what that series needed and what the ensemble as a whole needed for that nuclear character, that, you know, it's easy to make fun of the speech patterns. People parody it all the time. And yeah, there are cheesy moments and, you know, really ham-fisted acting at times. but it works, and it's what was needed. And it, you know, it's just, it's from, you know, from a different era of television first, and then, you know, the movies were just bigger than life explorations of things. Now, I will say that his better Kirk performances are 2 and 6, when he obviously had a director who was able somehow to rein him in, versus I think Nimoy let him sort of just run with it in 3 and 4, and then of course there's 5. And I think in motion picture you can definitely get a sense that he didn't really want to commit to it. But, you know, just a, you know, it's a wonderful lifetime performance. It's a perfect counterbalance to Nimoy's arc with Spock.
Yeah, you know, I mean, there's something to that. Like, you know, what you're saying about his best performances being in 2 and 6, like, even with that, you know, like, 2, it's extremely over the top. I mean, when he yells Khan, everyone loves it, and it is, like, one of the best moments in cinematic history and all that good stuff, but it is extremely over the top and, you know, not at all realistic, almost comedic, and yet completely appropriate for the material. And that really is sort of what is going on in the original series. What you were saying about it being, you know, from another time is really true. It's like his performance fits the aesthetic of the show. You know, it is bright colors, crazy aliens, you know, jumping kicks and judo chops, and his performance fits right in with all of that. If he were to play it like Patrick Stewart plays Captain Picard, it wouldn't have worked. It needs to be over the top. It needs to be playful and fun, and the result is awesome. His performance as Captain Kirk is so good that it's kind of ridiculous. And I think the qualities that he brings to it, which people tend to make fun of, are the exact qualities which make it great. And I agree that I can't really see anyone else as Captain Kirk, even though I do like what Chris Pine is doing in it. And as a side note, if anyone wants to see Chris Pine channel William Shatner, like, to a degree which is not present anywhere in these new movies, check out Into the Woods.
Yes. Good call.
Have you seen it?
I have seen it, and you're absolutely right. In when he sings Agony, there's definitely some twinges of Shatner peeking through there. Or even when he runs down the steps and he finds the shoe, the way he delivers lines.
It's a total Shatner performance. It's the really the only reason to watch that movie.
Agreed. Agreed.
But it's worth it just to see that, just to see what it would be like if Pine went full Shatner. So, Max, what about you? What do you think about Shatner's performance as Captain Kirk?
I have a hard time thinking of anything that either of you have said that is at all right.
Okay. All right.
Like, there's actually nothing all that over the top about his performance in the original series. It's actually fairly restrained and typical for the era and the genre and the other actors on the show. I mean, he actually seems to have more range than most of them, probably because he demanded more range than most of them.
I definitely think that's true. He does have more range, and he knows when to pull it back. And in episodes like City on the Edge of Forever, he's not over the top. But then you look at, like, Enemy Within.
Yes.
And look at
Enemy Within,
other
or
people on screen with him during those episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
like, he's not really over the top.
Oh, please. Okay. When he delivers the Constitution speech.
And he's playing, like, the drama of the episode. Like, it was the show. It was TV at the time. Like,
that's part of it. That's part of it for sure.
Okay. But I think that there's this logic that is extrapolated by taking Star Trek, a show from the 60s, and analyzing it from a modern perspective. And you have to constantly go, do we take the acting on the Twilight Zone as seriously as we would on a modern science fiction thriller? And the answer is, of course, no. We expect it to be overly dramatic and a little bit operatic and a little bit less plausible and down to earth, because the fact is, I mean, there are a lot of different factors that go into it, but I mean, like, one big part of it is that we can see all the details on screen a lot better, and when somebody has a minor little facial twitch, we can see it now. So you don't have to be loud and say your emotions as much. So I think, to a great extent, a lot of the acting differences are the result of it being from the 60s.
What I would just say, though, is that, yeah, you know, I think we acknowledge that there's definitely a, you know, an aspect of the era that influences the performance. But at the same time, Shatner is very, he's very, very theatrical. He's very stage performance. And contrast that with Nimoy, or even with Kelly. They're both next to him, and they're more restrained. And when you get to when he recites, I forget the name of the episode right now, I'm blanking right now, but when he recites the Constitution, you know, we hold these truths to be, he's giving like a school play right there. And it's so overblown. It's like on a totally different scale.
I'm not saying that that he's doing something that is indistinguishable from everyone else's thing. I'm saying that he is the star of the show, so he's obviously going to be more dramatic. He's obviously going to have the big speeches. He's obviously going to be less restrained than the rest of them.
I mean, I don't know if that's necessarily true, but I mean, I kind of see what you're saying, I guess.
But, like, I think it also extends to Star Trek II, where the shape of the show dictated what the shape of the films were. And in the first movie, there was this attempt to reinvent the show in this new form. And the reinvention was do everything restrained. So restrained that maybe the audience just leaves without realizing that the movie wasn't over. And in Star Trek II, the thought was, let's recapture the energy and dramatic quality of the show where there are dire consequences. And the ship literally might explode at any time, which is why Scotty is always stressed and sweating for no reason. And that attempt to reinvent it in this new form resulted in them recapturing some of the dramatic elements of the 1960s TV show. And some of it is archaic. You could call it a kind of generational artifact. And that kind of thing happens. And it still happens. It's even in the new movies. There are generational artifacts of the 1960s in those movies. Like, it's an unavoidable reality. Like, William Shatner is not a fundamentally strange or unusual actor. He's a good actor who was a leading man in the 1960s, and he had the leading role in a science fiction show that put him on a spaceship fighting aliens week to week. William Shatner was not William Shatner until he was Captain Kirk.
I mean, I guess that's probably true. Okay, but regardless of what we think about it and whether or not you agree with our analysis of William Shatner's performance, what is your take on William Shatner as Captain Kirk? I mean, I guess do you know what I'm trying to say? I mean, like, divorcing it from saying, like, look, he's not what you guys are saying. He's this.
I'm saying he made Captain Kirk what he was.
Okay. All right.
And Captain Kirk, aside from William Shatner, if you extrapolate Captain Kirk out of the show, out of time, and took all the pieces, like went through the character and pulled every bit of Shatner out of him, he would not really be much left. But if you took Captain Kirk out of William Shatner, he would just be some actor.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
Just real quick, I want to hit on something tying into Max, what you said, and Mike, what you said. I think it just crystallized for me. Yeah, they were trying to reinvent the series in the motion picture. And I think that you see what would have happened had they tried Captain Kirk in the Next Generation template. And I think that that finally crystallized for me as to one of the things that went wrong with that movie. It suddenly came into focus while you guys were talking about that.
Yeah,
that's interesting. Yeah. All right, so everyone knows Captain Kirk was played by William Shatner, and that's obviously what Shatner is best known for in Star Trek. But, you know, the thing that maybe doesn't get talked about quite as much is William Shatner's talents as a director, which are demonstrated in Star Trek V, The Final Frontier.
Yes.
Now, John.
Which one is that? The one with the whales?
It's the one with the rock monsters. Oh, no, wait.
Yeah, sadly, the rock monsters didn't appear.
Is that the one where he drowns a Catwoman for no reason?
Yes.
Reason to drown the Catwoman in that movie, okay? She was attacking him. That was self-defense.
He leaves her face down in a pool of water.
She's trying to kill him.
She wasn't trying to kill him.
She was trying to
kill him. She was trying to stop him from stopping somebody else.
No. Did you hear? I have a cat. Did you hear all of that meowing that was going on while she attacked him? She was trying to kill him. She's trying to sever his head from his neck. He was acting in self-defense on Nimbus 3.
Oh, my God, Sean. You got to watch that scene again.
Trust me. I've
very
seen...
Very clearly. I was just trying to hurt him.
By the way, just kind of a cross plug here. On this week's episode of Standard
Shatner?
Orbit...
Are you doing this as Shatner?
No, sorry. In this week's episode of Standard Orbit, Drew and I do a commentary for the animated series episode Mud's Passion.
Mm-hmm.
And... I point this out there, but if you look at that episode, it is basically a 25-minute animated version of Star Trek V. It's even got a Catwoman in it.
Gonna have to watch it.
Yeah, go watch it. It's terrible, but...
isn't it on Netflix now?
It is on Netflix. Check it out.
Maybe I'll stop watching.
I have a very, very special relationship with Star Trek V that I love it. I love every moment of it, and it's almost in a Stockholm Syndrome sort of sense because
it definitely is.
Many years ago, first off, it was the first Star Trek movie I saw in the theater. Second, many years ago, a girlfriend broke up with me, and I was, I'd been going out with her for 3 years, so, you know, you go through all the emotions, but I couldn't sleep, and it was like a week and a half where I couldn't sleep, and I kept trying to turn on movies, and, you know, Star Wars was keeping me too interested. Star Trek 2, I'm too interested. And, you know, I'm going through all of these movies. I know them really well. I'm trying to be able to... Star Trek 5 became the first time I was able to fall asleep in a week and a half. And so I wound up putting on the movie every single night for like a month because it would lull me to sleep. And I wound up basically listening to the entire movie in my... And so basically I have it memorized. And it's like imprinted in my brain through like sleep... You know, it was like Dr. Marvin Monroe's tapes from The Simpsons. It got into my head, and as a result, I have this tremendous emotional affinity for it. And I can actually peel away some of the problems with it and see the good inside of it, like the stuff that's worth enjoying. And I think that it's commentary. It's social commentary about self-help and, you know, recognizing and accepting our pain and how it helps define us. That's still relevant, and more people should listen to it. So... I tend to defend Star Trek V.
John, this is the saddest story I've ever
it
heard
is not.
In my life.
It is not the saddest story because it has a great ending.
Parents dying in car crashes, and then like they did, like at the hospital, the doctor's like, "What's that on your face? Oh, you have melanoma. You're gonna die." And then their dog just explodes. And that is less sad than the story you just told.
Listen, man, it has a great ending because I got good sleep, and I swear to God,
I'm gonna start crying.
Well, see, there's the positive spin to the story right there. I've brought joy to your life.
Joy?
Yeah, catharsis. You're getting rid of all the negative emotions. You'll feel better at the end of it.
Did you learn nothing from Star Trek V? You don't want to get rid of your negative emotions. They make you who you are. John, your story not only is the saddest story in the world, but is the story of your failure.
I'm more like Cybok than Kirk. That's the whole thing.
All right. Well, you know, what about you, Max? What are your feelings on Star Trek V?
I don't know anymore.
More importantly than that, I mean, like, what do you think about Shatner's contribution to it?
Who cares at this point?
Okay. All right. Fair enough. For me, like, Star Trek V was...
I just want to meet God and not give him a starship.
Okay. For me, Star Trek V was kind of like... Well, it was the Star Trek movie that I watched where I was like, you know, after seeing 2, 3, and 4, after being disappointed by 1 and then loving 2, 3, and 4, I very anxiously put on 5 the next morning after watching that trilogy for the first time, if you want to call it a trilogy. And I was like...
I don't.
No, I don't either, actually. No, it's not it a trilogy. And I watched Star Trek 5 and I'm like, oh, yeah. That's not good. But, you know, just like any Star Trek fan, I watched all the movies repeatedly because, you know, that's just what you do, whether you like them or not. Because I don't know why people do that. I mean, that's kind of like the point of this show is to say, like, stop watching the crappy Star Trek just because you think that's all that there's out there. Go out and watch some movies that aren't Star Trek, like Showtime. Which we'll be talking about in a few weeks.
And I also want to throw a challenge flag here on you enjoy Star Trek 3? Because Star Trek 3 is, listen, I defend Star Trek 5 because of my whole weirdness and the whole tragic story, but Star Trek 3 is a pretty bad movie. Star Trek 3 is at least as bad as Star Trek 5.
Star Trek 3 is worse than Star Trek 5.
Yeah, let's not get Max started on Star Trek 3, please.
No, let's get me started on Star Trek 3.
No, because that doesn't have anything to do with what we're talking about right now.
Oh, it has a little bit to do with everything.
But, you know, the thing about Star Trek 5 is when I look at it now, especially, like, I've taken, like, a heavy interest in it because of my love of Shatner, and I kind of see it as, like, an extension of that persona. Of the Shatner persona. And when I look at it from that angle, I kind of love it in the same way that people love Shatner's performances. I see it as just this sort of goofy nutball thing. And it's like the beginning, I don't think you even need to defend the beginning. Like everything up until they get back on the starship, I think is really solid. All the stuff on Yosemite and everything like that, I think that's great. And
sorry, I think we're not recording my facial expression.
Actually, I am recording your facial expression.
Oh, good. Watch this.
But the end of it, the last half is kind of dumb, of course. But I still love it for its sort of campy nature, you know. I love the goofiness of it and the sort of like almost stupidity of it. Like the things that make it bad are kind of the things that I love it. And I hate it when people say like, oh, this movie is so bad it's good. Like there's something about that which I just find to be very strange.
It's only true for one movie anyway.
What's that?
Troll 2.
Okay,
what about The Room? The Room's in that conversation.
Yeah, I haven't seen either of those movies. But
come on.
Yeah.
What's The Room?
Tommy Wiseau. We'll have to go see The Room someday.
Oh, no.
Okay. Okay.
Doesn't count. Troll 2 is so bad, it's good.
Okay. But Star Trek 5 has that kind of thing going for it, where you watch it and you're just like,
God, how did I forget them?
What the hell are they doing in this movie? This is insane to think that they thought that this was a thing to do. I love it now. I love seeing... And there is a lot of stuff in there which I think is really good. I think that he is a good director. I think that sometimes he makes bad choices. But I think that he is a good director, as evidenced by the fact that that opening credit sequence was completely ripped off by John Woo for Mission Impossible 2.
Makes a mistake.
No, especially not in that movie.
John Woo has never made an error.
No, unless you count Paycheck.
Broken Arrow.
Yeah, Broken Arrow, that was another one.
Yeah, Broken Arrow was pretty bad.
Also a bunch of other ones.
Yeah, a few other ones here and there. But yeah, I mean, I love that. I love Star Trek V mainly because it was directed by Shatner. There's just something about that which I find to be fascinating and amazing. And it's sort of like a perfect storm of like weirdness in that movie, which just comes across on the screen, and it's great. It's great to watch from that perspective. So there you go. Any final thoughts on William Shatner's work in Star Trek, John?
Award-winning, although I don't think he ever won an award for it, but he should have. He totally should have won awards for it.
I agree. Max?
He definitely should have won some awards.
Yes, he should have. Anything
not
else?
For Star Trek V.
Not for Star Trek V.
Well, for most of the other ones, though.
Yeah, for me, I mean, I think it's amazing. Like we've been saying, you know, I agree with you guys. His performance is one of the best in television history. You know, you look at Star Trek II and Star Trek VI, that's some of the best in movie history. And I think that his contribution to Star Trek V, while maybe not tremendously good, is fascinating and awesome and kind of a tour de force. And I love it. I love that it exists. I think that that's amazing. Okay, so now before we go, now John, you and Charlene touched on the new Star Trek writing team last week, which is Simon Pegg and Doug Young. For those people who may have missed it or haven't heard for whatever reason, the new writers of Star Trek 13 are Simon Pegg and Doug Young. Simon Pegg. He is the guy who plays Scotty, but he has also written five movies, as far as I can tell. He wrote the Cornetto trilogy, Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and The World's End, and then he also did a rewrite of Run, Fat Boy, Run.
Oh, I've seen that. That's the movie with that chick from Mission Impossible 2.
Yeah, Tandy Newton.
Yeah.
All right.
And he also...
Tandy Computers Newton.
Yep. And he also wrote or co-wrote Paul, Greg Matola's movie. Matola?
Oh, that's right. Matola? Yeah, I always forget about Paul.
Yeah, that to me is... That's my favorite Simon Pegg script.
I always forget about Dave.
Dave? Yeah, that's
you know Kevin Kline,
Vice
President?
Yeah, Ivan Reitman, yeah. Hmm. Now, I like all those movies, and I like some of them a lot. I really, really love Paul, actually, but my love, I guess you could say, for Simon Pegg looks like hate in comparison to Max's love for Simon Pegg. So, Max, I really want to know what your thoughts are on Simon Pegg writing Star Trek. Now, I mean, just to preface this for those people who may not know, I mean, am I right in thinking that one of the movies which you consider to be the best of all time, if not the best of all time, is Shaun of the Dead, right?
Sure.
So how do you feel about the co-writer of Shaun of the Dead now working in Star Trek as a writer?
Not very much.
Yeah.
I don't really think that there's a lot of great possibilities with the franchise right now. I think that there's too much riding on success. There's not enough flexibility. There's not enough freedom. I mean, like, one of the reasons why Shaun of the Dead was so good was that they made it out of nothing. And they made it without an expectation. Like, they shaped a thing out of nothing. And that's not happening anymore. That hardly ever happens, and I don't really think that there's a way to recapture that sort of like creative magic in the context of a franchise that has to make a certain quantity of millions of dollars.
I kind of see what you're saying, and you know, it's interesting because I was just watching this interview with the Wachowskis where they were talking about something that actually we were discussing on our other show off topic a few weeks ago in regards to The Matrix, where, you know, I think you were saying that, you know, The Matrix is a product of the Star Wars generation, and that it is what should have been the natural response to Star Wars. And, you know, that's not what most people have done, you know. Instead, like J.J. Abrams, instead of making his Star Wars, he's making his Star Wars. Star Wars. Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that the Wachowskis were talking about in this interview was that, yeah, they were a product of the Star Wars generation. And the thing that you see in that generation with movies like Star Wars and Jaws and Raiders and everything is original properties, you know, which are not based on any books or anything like that. And they were all sort of amazing. And that's sort of what they wanted to do. They wanted to do The Matrix. They've got Jupiter Ascending coming out today and, you know, all that stuff. And there was just something about that, you know, when they were talking about it, where I was like, yeah, I see what they're saying. And it does kind of make me sad that a lot of, you know, stuff is franchise driven these days. But at the same time, Star Trek is sort of this anomaly, I think, in that sense, whereas it's not like the Fast and the Furious, for example, where every movie is faster and more furious or anything like that. Star Trek is such a huge universe that theoretically it should be a playground in which you can you know, play with different ideas and things like that. And while, you know, maybe it's not as great as an original work by Simon Pegg, I can definitely get excited over the idea of Simon Pegg playing in that playground. Let's look at it this way. And I see what you're saying about it being like a property that needs to make certain millions and the place that the franchise is at right now and everything like that. But in terms of, like, you know, looking at it, let's just say a bit more optimistically. If you could have anyone play in that playground, and let's say they're given free rein, let's say they don't have to write a script in 2 months or whatever and all this stuff. I mean, wouldn't Simon Pegg be one of the people up pretty high on that list of people who you would want to see make a Star Trek movie?
No.
No? Okay. That's interesting. That's weird. All right. Fair enough.
No, I would want somebody who didn't care, who would maybe destroy it.
Okay.
I would want Kim Jong-un.
Okay. All right. Well.
Well. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe. Maybe one day. And
I would be more excited about Simon Pegg doing, like, it doesn't matter that it's a franchise. What matters is that there are expectations and demands and a responsibility to not fail the franchise.
But he has been in that situation before with Run, Fat Boy, Run, and, you know, he came up.
Oh, yes. Really Run, solid. Fat Boy, Run was exactly the same, I guess, Star Trek 3.
I'm just saying, you know.
No, you're right. They are one-to-one. They are an exact. That combination has to be the subject of the first episode of CTS2-1 because it is a one-to-one ratio.
All right,
they are the exact same situation. Run, Fat Boy, Run and the next Star Trek movie are basically the same film.
You know, David Schwimmer directed Run, Fat Boy, Run.
Yes.
Okay.
I know that.
Right.
David
anyway.
Schwimmer, totally great as Ross and Friends. He's a halfway decent director.
Mm-hmm.
And basically might as well be directing the next Star Trek movie.
That'd be interesting.
Flip a coin either way. David Schwimmer, Justin Lin, same thing. I don't even know which one is which if you show me two pictures of them.
Okay, so now let's talk about Doug Young a little bit, just because he's sort of the wild card here and that a lot of people don't know his work. As you guys talked about last week, he did Confidence, and he is also the creator of the TV show Dark Blue, and now is working on a show called Banshee. Now, I've seen Confidence. Max, have you seen Confidence?
Yeah.
And John, you haven't seen Confidence.
Right? No, I have.
Oh, you have?
I have.
Okay. Yeah. And are we all in agreement that it's a decent movie?
It is decent.
Oh, my God. It's like totally... Honestly, I forgot it immediately after I saw it.
It may be that, but it's also decent. It's also decent. It's not...
Is it?
You know, I never had the desire to go back and watch it again, but I do
not. Remember having anything against it.
We'll have to watch it for this show.
Anything eventually. Of it.
Okay. And have you guys seen Dark Blue?
No, I haven't.
I haven't.
Yeah. And what do you think about Dark Blue, Max? Yeah.
No.
Okay.
I mean, hey, I don't hate it.
Okay.
That's saying a lot.
I guess so. So we shall see what this new team brings, but it's exciting times in Star Trek. All right. Well, it's been fun talking about William Shatner and his work in Star Trek, but that's not all that we're talking about this week on Trek FM. So here's a look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
I really, really, really hope that if they do that, they make Chang the villain because, you know, Captain Chang instead of General Chang or whatever, mm-hmm. you know? I mm-hmm. mean, that just seems like the perfect way to go.
Earl Grey.
All right, Riker, we're promoting you to captain. I mean, you killed the last captain. We usually don't reward that. That's usually not our policy, but in this case...
Well, to be fair, he had spent some time on a Klingon ship.
The Orb.
But the Federation and Bajor as a member of the Federation would be helping rebuild Cardassia. And I could see, like, very much the relationship between the U.S. and Japan today. I could see the Federation and Cardassia having that kind of relationship moving forward.
To the journey!
Janeway has a very distinct pain noise.
Yeah, she kind of does.
You know what I'm talking
does.
About?
It sounds sort of like she's suffocating.
Yeah, it sounds like she's suffocating and sometimes, and I'm going to keep it clean, not always in pain.
The Ready Room.
He is the best cosplayer ever because he's so buried himself in his part that we have no idea who this guy is outside of the impersonation of Tuvok.
Exactly. He's the Christian Bale of the Delta Quadrant.
Mission Log, a Roddenberry Star Trek podcast.
If I'm not mistaken, in any upcoming episode of Next Generation, we don't see full-grown golden retrievers running around the decks of the Enterprise. And I'm also a little worried that Captain Picard has never played with puppies.
Commentary, Trek stars.
But you'd rather see Red in charge than him.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Right.
Because you really want porn stash to go down.
Yes, yes, you do. And that sentence out of context sounds really strange.
Literary Treks.
As great as Picard is and his Picard maneuver, I don't think Picard straightening his shirt is going to help him when he's going up against the Riker maneuver.
Fair enough, yeah.
So. Axanar, the official podcast.
The changes that we've made, the change to the nacelles and several other aspects of these ships to make them distinct and not the same ships as in Star Trek 2009.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows to get in on the daily Trek Talk. We have new shows for you every day, and you can find them on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Podcast Directory for Xbox and Zune, or you can stream them from the website. Just visit Trek.fm/... No, don't visit that because I don't think it's accurate anymore. Just go to Trek.fm. You'll find it there. You'll find them all there.
Yes.
All right. Before we go, we'd like to ask everyone to please support our sponsor who helps us bring commentary, Trek Stars, to you each week. And our sponsor for this show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all of the books you've always wanted to read but never thought you'd have the time for. Audible is the premier source of audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from and new titles coming every week, from classics to current bestsellers, and even some of your most famous Star Trek books like Prime Directive, Federation. Actually, I don't think Spock's World is on there anymore, so sorry. But it does have something for everyone, even Star Trek, The Ashes of Eden, which was the first novel for Star Trek, written by William Shatner. And it's also narrated by William Shatner. One of the most gripping and personal Star Trek stories ever told, The Ashes of Eden provides a new understanding of one of science fiction's greatest heroes, as written and read by William Shatner.
Does it have the runtime?
It's 2 hours and 38 minutes.
Does it have the runtime without the pauses?
If you ran it through that filter, it would probably be like an hour and a half. But
an hour and a half? Maybe 9 minutes.
But you can get it for free since you listen to Trek FM. As a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. So give it a try today. Catch up on all those classic Star Trek books you've yet to read and that latest novel from your favorite author as well. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm. And we thank Audible for supporting Commentary, Trek Stars, and Trek FM. And lastly, there's one more way that you can help us out here on the network, and that's by going to patreon.com/trekfm and becoming a patron of the network. You know, there's different donation levels for you to choose from with different categories of rewards and things like that, bonus content or producer credit, all sorts of things. And every little bit helps. It would be greatly appreciated. So just go over to patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. And help us out. All right. Well, I guess that's it for this. John, where can people find you on the internet?
They can find me crawling around Twitter at Kessel Junkie, and they can find me on a weekly podcast called Words with Nerds. It drops every Thursday on iTunes and blah, 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 all those other places.
Excellent.
The internet.
The internet, yes.
A series of tubes bringing you entertainment.
Yes. Ooh, I've got another idea. Words with Sabotage.
You can find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K, and you can find me right here on Trek FM doing Standard Orbit with Drew, where we talk about the original series and William Shatner every single week. You can also find Max and I on CommentaryTrackStars.com, where we do Commentary Track Stars off
Sabotage.
Topic with our friend Brandon. And you can find us on Twitter at ComTrackStars, or you can email us at ComTrackStars@gmail.com.
Sabotage.
So that's it for William Shatner's work on Star Trek. And we will be back next week to look at the first movie in the Shatnerverse, Free
Sabotage.
Enterprise.
Oh, sorry.
Free Enterprise.